I actually watched both movies this week. Like, I could have skipped 28 Days Later because I've seen that movie so many times. I kind of wanted to watch them back to back to fully judge 28 Weeks. So I watched them both. Like, this is the first time in a long time that we've done a movie episode that I watched the movie prior to doing
it. I mean, you did what we were supposed to do.
What we're supposed to be doing right. Every week, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, so
I'm thrilled, though.
I feel good about it. What's up? This is Movies on Up, the life of the party before she got a life. I am Dave, joined by the life of my party, Ryan.
Still got a life, though.
Yes, and we are Movies on Up. The tagline this week, the life of the party before she got a life. If you know what movie that's from, hit us up, moviesonup@gmail.com, facebook.com/moviesonup, or the Twitter, @moviesonup. We've actually gotten better at least tweeting out when we have a new episode. So,
although you guys already know when we have a new episode because you listen.
Oh, yeah, our droves and droves of listeners. But this week kicks off our first full week of Halloween. Last week we kicked it off with our 31 for 31, which was a fun episode to do. We're straight movies here for the next couple of weeks where we're doing about two movies a week. This week, very, very cool week for me. I've said many, many times I've dubbed my favorite movie of all time, and we're actually doing it now. And I mean, I've lucked out. We've done a Die Hard episode. We've done a Gremlins episode. We've done episodes of movies that I love dearly.
I feel like we've probably, most of our favorite movies have managed to get an episode there.
Oh, yeah. So this is my absolute favorite movie of all time. This is 28 Days Later, directed by Danny Boyle, starring Cillian Murphy, Brendan Gleeson, Naomi Harris, Christopher Eccleston, written by Alex Garland. I love this movie so much. In a couple of days, we're going to look at the follow-up, 28 Weeks Later.
Produced by
Danny Boyle, distanced from by Alex Garland. I had some feelings on that movie that I did decide to give it another shot, and we'll discuss that later this week. This week was cool, though, because I actually watched the movies that we're discussing. Usually we do movies that
pulling the curtain back.
Yeah, usually we do movies we've seen so many times.
They've still never seen a Star Wars movie.
I haven't. I was making it. I was winging it for the last 6 months. I wanted to watch 28 Weeks Later because that was the whole point of doing it. Was to give it new eyes, and I've seen 28 Days. I can recite 28 Days Later.
I can recite the first, you know, like 10 minutes.
I could probably go and just lip sync the entire
movie. First
10
minutes of Cillian Murphy. I can do all that.
I can lip sync the entire movie because I know every line. I've seen this movie so many times, but I did watch it again. I'm glad I did because I do love it more and more every time. We're going to talk about 28 Days Later, but before that, hit me up with a box office on this one.
You love 28 Days Later a lot. I like it as well.
I saw it 8 times in the movie theater.
Well, you may have been the reason that it was in the top 5.
I took 3 different ladies to see this movie.
Whoa. Yeah. And I'm not even going to ask because I don't want to know. This is a good first date with Dave. You take him to see 28 Days Later. It does not obviously mean there's going to be a second date.
No.
So. Well, thanks to you and your harem, it did open number 4 in the box office on June 27th of 2003 to about $10 million. When it opens number 4, it sounds kind of maybe bad or not great, but when you consider the movies that were ahead of it.
It's middle of the summer for a small, like, British movie,
sure.
Pretty much.
And it was preceded in the box office by Charlie's Angels, which was number 1, the original, with $37 million. After that was Hulk. And then Finding Nemo. The Hulk, that's a summer movie if there ever was one. Finding Nemo is a huge success anyway. And then Charlie's Angels, which did pretty well too. That's another summer, like, tentpole blockbuster.
And I mean, that's really impressive because it's not really a summer movie. Like, this is the kind of movie you would think would be released in, like, October or so. In relative terms, it's a small British movie. Danny Boyle, he had found success with Trainspotting, but he wasn't Danny Boyle of today.
They made it on $8 million.
Yeah.
The budget.
Cillian Murphy was some unknown British actor. You know, you didn't have any. Even Brendan Gleeson and Eccleston weren't really huge over
here. That was before he was Doctor Who.
So, I mean, this was nobody. This was a small British movie that got thrown out in the middle of the summer and held its own.
Yeah, I mean, it went on to gross $45 million domestically. So, and I think worldwide, $82 million. So you make it for eight. Worldwide, you gross 82. That says sequel. It also says it's good for 1,630th place all time on the domestic charts. Dave, can you guess the movie directly above it?
What was it, 42 million?
45 million.
45 million. John Carter.
No, it was The Giver from last year.
Not far off.
No, not far off. The movie directly below it at 1,631. It's a comedy.
Charlie's Angels 2.
Hall Pass.
Oh.
Yeah. There was a couple movies that I just kind of wanted to mention because they're right around there. One of them very near and dear to my heart. Midnight Cowboy was 1,644 all time and one of my favorite movies to this day. And a movie from this year, Colossal Failure, which we both saw coming, would be Army Hammer's Man from Uncle.
Yeah.
1,684 is where that's at the time that I looked. So $45 million domestically, not a bad haul. It's more than half of what it made worldwide.
Yeah, I was just looking up Hall Pass the other day because Project Greenlight's back. And I was looking up to see, like, outside of season three, I didn't know what happened to the dudes from the other seasons. And the winner of the first season actually wrote Hall Pass.
Ooh. Was Project Greenlight where Feast came from?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay.
Gulager.
I like Feast.
I did not.
Well,
I did like this movie, though. So it made a lot of money. To release this in the summer is ballsy. This movie changed a lot of things for me. I've always loved horror movies, and I like dark and atmospheric horror movies. This did that. I've always loved zombie movies, which that's a whole other discussion. That's getting you in the seats.
Are we having this discussion?
We don't have to. I mean, yes, they're not zombies. They're not risen from the dead. But when you see the trailer, it looks like a zombie movie. This gave birth to the running zombies, which, say what you will, these aren't zombies, so right. If they're running, who cares? When Dawn of the Dead follows it up and those are zombies that are running, that makes no sense. So this is cool because it did kind of reinvigorate that. It gave something new to the genre, even if it's not technically part of the genre.
And I think they did a good job of letting you know right out of the shoot. I had forgotten that this movie starts with the whole monkey scene.
Oh, it doesn't waste any time.
No, it doesn't. So you know right there and then, they're not zombies. This is an infection.
They're infected, yeah.
Right, and that's what they're called, is the infected. I thought I would go to the old Webster's and actually find the definition for zombie. As a noun, it is the body of a dead person, given the semblance of life, but mute and willless by a supernatural force, usually for some evil purpose, or the supernatural force itself. That's not what
these.
We have here.
These
right.
are infected,
so rabid
people.
So not
a
zombie movie.
No, but I mean,
no.
I understand both sides of the argument. It is not a zombie movie.
It is not.
But you have to admit you understand why it's associated with the zombie genre.
I understand its association. I don't think that it's wrong to associate it, but if we were going to do a list for favorite zombie movies,
it's not on it.
Right. This isn't on the list because this isn't a zombie movie.
It's an infected movie.
Absolutely. Glad we have that straight.
But it did help breathe life into
a dead
the zombie
genre.
Movement. Wah, yeah. Wah, wah. Yeah. It gave something new to the zombie genre.
It reanimated the zombie genre for an evil purpose.
So they're not zombies. They're not dead. So, I mean, they're spry. They're living beings that they're not decrepit. And they're just driven by rage. And I love the beginning of this movie because the biggest problem a lot of like stupid zombie movies take, I don't need to know the cause of the zombie outbreak.
Like Patient Zero, you don't need to
I don't need to know that. So this doesn't spend a lot of time on it.
We don't know what happened in Night of the Living Dead, but I don't think that stops anybody from loving the movie.
Yeah, and this, you get an idea where it's from. Like, it's a nice little theme at the beginning because these activists have good intentions, but they're doing a terrible, terrible thing. That kind of comes back to play later. The soldiers have good intentions, but they're doing a terrible, terrible thing. So it kind of comes full circle there. But I do love that it doesn't waste any time. It's the ultimate Jurassic Park tease, I feel like.
Sure.
Where the first 6 minutes are yelling, don't do it. They're infected with rage. You see some infected. And then 15 minutes of Cillian Murphy's Wang and walking around.
I love the fact that you said atmospheric horror, because that's what this movie does. For 15 minutes, it's him walking around a completely dead city. The city is sort of, I mean, we're not calling them zombies because they're not, but the city's sort of a zombie. And he's kind of mindlessly walking through it. It sort of reminded me of like a, more like a music video. I mean, you've got the score going, which I really like the score.
That's another, I mean, like I want to hit a checklist at the end. We'll talk about the music, but it is atmospheric and it doesn't stop with him walking around. Like he wakes up in this hospital, it's empty. He walks around town, it's empty. The score is fantastic, kind of covering it, building up. He's not doing a lot, but he's delivering. Like, it's hard to be the only person on screen for 10 minutes or so. But at this point, he's not the only character, because the city was a character with him, just it being empty. But the atmosphere doesn't stop. Even when they get to Hannah and Brendan Gleeson's apartment, it feels awkward. Like, you feel like you're invading this dad and his daughter. Like, you feel like you're in their space when you don't belong. When they get to the soldiers, it feels like you're at an awkward dinner where you're not quite sure that you want to be there yet. So that continues the whole time, that you're just sucked into this world.
And I think they do it in a way that, kind of sitting watching this, and especially now, watching it now, it feels like it could be, you know, a spinoff of Walking Dead, which, I mean, this came out before the comics did, so it's weird to even think in those terms, as opposed to Walking Dead's a spinoff of this. But it is sort of that question of what if. It's not so much about the infected. It's, okay, if this really happened, what then would you do? They're not trying to find a cure. They're just trying to survive in this world, and how would you do that?
If I start another band in my life, we could put out a whole album naming songs after lines from this movie. The dialogue in this movie is phenomenal. There are so many lines that just are great, and one of those delivered by Selena is, maybe staying alive is as good as it gets. Because for her and Mark, when Jim comes across them, that's all they're trying to do. They're trying to stay alive. They're trying to get from day to day. They're not looking for a cure. They're not looking to wait it out. For them, this is what life is. So, you know, maybe staying alive is as good as it gets. But then you get to the soldiers and Christopher Eccleston talking, and like,
he's got a different idea.
He's got a different idea. We're not just here to survive. We have to rebuild. He's not talking about curing. You know, he's not talking about fixing. He's just, we have to rebuild society. And they have Mailer tied up to learn these things are never going to, they're never going to grow crops. They're never going to do anything. And they're going to show him how long it takes them to starve to death. So you have two different approaches, and they both make sense. It does suck you in, because you have the Mark and Selena tactic of, we're living on the street, we're finding a safe place at night, we're doing what we need to survive. You have Hannah and Brendan Gleeson locked away in their apartment, trying to collect rain, trying to collect condensation. Like, they're trying to survive.
There's strategies. Like,
they're different strategies.
Yeah,
and Brendan Gleeson realize we can't stay in this apartment forever, and thus the road trip to meet the soldiers. The score isn't just great in those 10 minutes that Jim is walking around the city. It's fantastic the whole time. Even the upbeat music in the grocery store, like you have a lighter moment. Mm-hmm. The music over the climax. We'll talk more about that piece of music later this week with 28 Weeks Later.
Yeah, I was going to say, probably twice this week.
Yeah, but you have it over the climax, and it's a build.
It's great to set the mood and to kind of, the visuals, the cinematography. Anthony Dodd Mantle was a cinematographer on this. And working with Boyle, they did some really, really cool shots.
Beautiful shots.
Yeah, I mean, for, you know, a horror movie, it's shot wonderfully, and the way they shoot it is to make you feel a certain way. And the music, John Murphy did the music, and it really kind of works hand in hand with the visuals. And you definitely get a feeling by just watching the movie. And it has very little to do with the actual quote-unquote plot and what's happening.
I mean, the cinematography and the camera work in this movie and the music are separate characters. Kind of what I want to talk about is this movie, why I love it so much. When you look at factors that make like a great movie, acting, I think everybody's top notch in here. I think Hannah slips a couple of times, but I think for the most part, everybody pretty much nails it. Disagree or no?
I probably agree with what you're saying. I think that the ones that really needed to do most of the heavy lifting, Murphy, Naomi Harris, and Brendan Gleeson. And I love Brendan Gleeson throughout the...
And this is before I fell in love with Brendan Gleeson.
Right. Yeah, I mean, having that sort of the optimistic trait that he's got of like, come on, guys, we're going to go do this.
And the fatherly thing.
Yeah, he has all that kind of until they get to where they think is going to be particularly safe. And it's not exactly what he thinks it's going to be. And then you can kind of see it all just sort of drain out of him where, you know, he is a father and he's trying to find the best life for his daughter. And he had himself and everyone else so convinced that this was going to be it. And all that's just gone very quickly.
Yeah. Acting, the direction, I think the pacing of it's great. Like, there are some moments that could come off as slow, but I feel like they don't. Because it's not nonstop action. The action is well spaced out.
Yeah.
But I don't feel like it ever drags. The cinematography is phenomenal. I mean, there are some shots in there. The shot of them driving across with the flowers, some of the wide shots of the city, the exploding gas station. One of my favorite shots when Mark is telling his story, the shot of Selena, just a profile shot. It looks like an album cover, and it doesn't really make sense there, but it works so well.
That whole scene, there's one where he's kind of telling the story, and you can see their reflection in the window.
Yes.
That they're looking out, and their reflection is above the rest of the city. So it seems like they're kind of above the chaos at this point, and they're sort of safe. But, you know, as you find out, like, 10 minutes later, they're really not.
Yeah, there's so many shots like that where it's cool. Like, that reflection shot is definitely unique. The shot of Selena is out of place in most movies, but works. And just some of the scenery is just beautifully shot. We mentioned it. The score is awesome because the score doesn't feel like a movie score. Because it doesn't feel like it's acting beat for beat with the movie. Like it doesn't.
But it is. I mean, it's perfectly synced to what's
yes,
going on.
But it doesn't feel like an orchestra watching the movie and raising and going down. It just, the music is elevating as the plot is elevating.
It's very organic. It's not like a Hans Zimmer score when you notice it.
Yes.
You never notice it, but you always know it's there, and it's perfect.
It's got all the stuff I love. The foreshadowing, like the guy telling it's going to end badly for you. That's such good foreshadowing. They're watching the Bloody Simpsons, you know, they're on a plane somewhere and he sees the plane and that kind of turns the whole thing. There's just so much good about this movie. And what it did for me, as somebody who's always loved movies as art and has loved like horror movies, this showed me that you can combine them. This is the first like horror movie that I watched that I thought, oh, this is on par with Oscar contender. This has everything an Oscar contender does. The direction, the music, the score, the cinematography, everything about this movie, you could put it up with the best movies of that year. It's going to hang with them. And it's a horror movie.
Right. Somebody like Danny Boyle, of course. You
but
know,
at,
he's,
but at
he's
this
that
point,
good of a filmmaker.
Yeah. Now, but I mean, at this point,
you're right.
He wasn't on there.
Right. But it's easy to see that now. Like,
oh,
well,
yeah.
Of course. You know, why wouldn't this be like an Oscar worthy? Because he's that good of a director.
I mean, he makes a movie and it's an Oscar contender right now.
Right.
So it makes sense, but I didn't know that about Danny Boyle at the time. Like, I had seen Trainspotting, thought it was great. This came out, I loved it. It was so fantastic, and it showed me that a horror movie doesn't have to be a throwaway horror movie, for lack of a better term. In a way, all horror movies are kind of throwaway horror movies, because they're, here's your plot, here's where we're going. I loved that it was a piece of art. Yeah, Halloween... I'm not trying to take away things from...
I mean, we've said Halloween is a perfect horror movie.
Yes, The
already.
Thing is a perfect movie.
Sure.
But this was... And we try not to do... We're not film... I watch films, not movies. We don't do that. But this movie is a piece of art. And it was the most artistic I'd ever seen a horror movie get. Because at its core, it's a horror movie. I mean, that's what it is. And it's got some of my favorite elements of horror movies where, in the end... The infected are just there. They're not the biggest threat. By the end of the movie, it's a matter of survival, but it's not about getting away from the infected.
Which to me is, again, harkens the comparison to Walking Dead. The walkers are never your biggest problem. It's when you come across other human beings. They're the real enemy. They're sort of why we're in this mess to begin with, because we created the rage virus. Get all that humans sort of are the enemy, but it does seem to reflect, at least to me, and hopefully I don't come across too pretentious when I say this, but it does seem like a very kind of European attitude towards horror movies. I think Americans have this idea that it's got to be splat and just cash. You know, you throw out some camp counselors, and I love Friday the 13th movies as much as, you know, anybody. I love those, but that's what those are. You know, those are slash them up, cash grabs. And these movies, and some of the reasons that I like, you know, Argento and some of Fulci's stuff, they do try and do some different things with the camera. They're not just seeing how gruesome we can kill people. They do that, but they work well with all aspects of filmmaking. It's not just, let's just see if we how many heads we can cut off, how many boobs we can show.
And to kind of further that point, it's not super gory. Like, yeah, you have the blood when they're spitting up, but it's never really clear what the infected are doing when they're just hitting people like they're
the camera
smacking.
Shaking, and you love that camera shaking stuff.
It works in this one, though, because it's not overdone in this one. There are moments where it might be a little much. There was a sequel that came later that I thought did too much. When Mark gets bit and Celine goes after him, that is one of the goriest, most gruesome shots, but it's so fast that you don't notice it. If you slow it down and watch it frame by frame, she cuts his arm off, and it looks great, but it's so fast. They put the effort to make it look good. You don't even see it, really. But I've watched that frame by frame so many times. And even that,
weirdo.
that's another like foreshadowing where you didn't even hesitate. Not for a heartbeat. That was longer than a heartbeat. One of my favorite lines, one of the sweetest lines in that movie, because you see Jim, he has an arc. Jim and Selena kind of have opposite arcs, where Selena starts at this.
She becomes more like him at the beginning.
He becomes more like her at the end. And they both meet in the middle, kind of. But she starts realizing maybe there's something to kind of live for. Like, maybe you don't have to be this badass that's staying alive is as good as it gets. And she kisses him on the cheek. And when she says, "I'm sorry," just him delivering the, "It's okay, you can keep it," is one of the, like, sweetest, like, likable lines ever. And it's just, that's his character. He's the middle ground between Brendan Gleeson and Celine, and I love the dynamic with him and Brendan Gleeson trying to talk him into letting Hannah have a Valium, and when he wakes him up when he's having a bad dream. Like, Cillian Murphy had to do a lot in this movie, and I look at it like Charlie Cox in Stardust, which it's another movie we mention a lot, but and you get away with it because you didn't know who Cillian Murphy was.
Right.
Just like in Stardust, Matthew Vaughn said Orlando Bloom and other, like, big-time actors wanted to be in that movie, but you know Orlando Bloom. You know he's Legolas. So nerdy Orlando Bloom in the beginning, you know, is badass Orlando Bloom in the end. Nerdy Charlie Cox, you don't know that dude's Daredevil. You don't know that by the end he's beating up people in a hallway. This is kind of the same thing, where you don't know Cillian Murphy. He starts off as a naked guy on the bed of a hospital table, and he ends up shoving his thumbs.
He ends up as a naked guy on a bed.
Shoving his thumbs through somebody's skull socket, which is, to this day, one of my favorite death scenes ever. How it's done and how it's shot and the brutality of it.
Which I think is a great, again, you talk about things going full circle. I mean, you know, we start with when the rage virus gets out. It's just absolute pandemonium. It's carnage. It's not just zombies like trying to eat your brains. These infected folks are really just trying to rip up anything they can, and they do it in the most savage ways possible. So you see Jim acting in this manner. You understand why Celine thinks that he could very well be infected because of the way he's attacking this other guy.
And just that whole moment with the pause, and that was longer than a heartbeat, and they kiss, and then Hannah comes and hits him and says, "I thought he was biting you." And then just Jim's, the way he just says, are you stoned? Just, it's a long story. And they leave. It just, so many good things about this movie that I honestly could, I love it so much for good reason. And it's not, I say without a doubt, it's my favorite movie of all time. And I don't feel like I need to justify it, because if you appreciate movies, I feel like this would be a hard movie to watch and not at least appreciate how well everything comes together.
Like you said, you have a checklist to be a good movie. Regardless of genre, you want to have these boxes checked. And I think it does a pretty good job of checking all the boxes. I do have, I don't know if they're necessarily nitpicky things, that sort of bother me about it.
Can I start off with the one thing that bothers me the
most? Yeah, sure, because it might be one of the ones.
The scene in the tunnel.
Yeah.
I just don't like that scene. The taxi driving over all the cars. Everything else feels so atmospheric and real. That takes me out of it for that brief few minutes.
And then even the way that scene ends, you
where
have
just lifting the car.
You have the infected chase them and then stop running. Like they've decided, shit, we're never going to catch this car.
Yeah.
And I don't see any, if this were a zombie movie, they would just amble on mindlessly forever until they got distracted
stop.
By something else.
Yeah.
This seems to give the idea that the infected still have some amount of mental capacity where they can reason that they're not going to catch this. And if that's the case, then these things are much smarter than we had previously given them credit for, and the rest of the movie, I think, should play out much differently. And that's probably unintentional. If the scene ends and I don't see them stop running, I don't have that problem.
But. Yeah, that whole scene is the weakest point. I just don't like the taxi driving over the cars.
Yeah, it's some real monster truck stuff, and that's not a monster truck.
But that, I mean, that's my biggest gripe about the movie. What are your others?
My other one, and they're somewhat connected. I went off and went real deep into Inside Baseball because I was trying to figure it out. And the movie was shot on prosumer cameras. They were Canon cameras. And it was one of the first movies that was actually, Soderbergh had one, I think it was Soderbergh, that was filmed pretty much entirely on this DV, which was the format at the time. And there were thoughts that when they went to post-production that it kind of got compressed and maybe overproduced on the back end. And there were just some frame issues that it seemed like it's kind of fit because it made sometimes the infected seem very herky-jerky in their movements and not fluid like a human. And I guess that's okay because they're not. But it didn't do it consistently enough for me to say, oh, they're doing that on purpose.
The herky-jerky, like if you look at them, when they focus on the infected, like when you have Mailer out there by himself, he's really herky-jerky. One of my favorite moments is when he first encounters the priest. This is the first, like, really look at the infected you get.
Fada.
The priest that's there, that's the guy that, he's the movement coach. This is the guy that developed the movement of the infected and taught all the actors, like, this is how our infected move. So if you watch him, he's a little more animated. This is the father of the movement.
Fada.
He's really just like real jerky and everything. So I see what you're saying, and I think it might have been somewhat intentional. You kind of lose that jerky movement when there's a bunch of them.
Sure.
Like you don't see it as much because when they're in bulks, they're more just running. But that whole church scene, I love it. Like one of the creepiest things is just when one face turns and looks at him and then the other one does. Like that's such a creepy moment. And then him hitting I shouldn't have done that. I shouldn't have done that. Like, it's just so cool. But the compression thing, that is such a weird thing to bring up, but it does make sense.
Especially when you try and watch it nowadays with the TVs that we have.
Yes.
And you look at it and you're like, oh, shit.
It doesn't transfer as well. And
no.
To compare it to music, you have these bands that came up like Dirty and Gritty, and they self-produced their first few albums, and then they get studio money, and they don't even sound like themselves because it just sounds overproduced. In a way, this almost feels overproduced to the point of being underproduced. It's really good quality that's produced to the point to where it takes away some of that quality. On the flip side of that, I feel like it does build that atmosphere. I think it brings you into that world a little bit more. I honestly think it do.
It could.
It's gloomy. It's dark.
For me, I
feel it builds the atmosphere.
I was like, no, wait. I have to now adjust my TV for this, and I don't like having to do that. I don't necessarily blame Danny Boyle or you stupid movie. I'm not shaking my fist like some kind of old man. I think it's really awesome that those cameras that he shot this movie on were the same cameras I had in college. So to know, like, at the time that this movie is made on the cameras that I have here, it really kind of eliminates any sort of barrier. It's like, oh, well.
I can't do that quality.
I guess if I had $8 million, maybe I could make this movie. No, I could make this movie. I'm not Danny Boyle.
This movie that made $120 million total is made on the camera that I'm using.
Yeah, exactly. I think it really just kind of showed what down the road that digital could be capable of doing. It's just, looking back on it now, especially, you know, with Blu-ray players now that try and upscale everything, oh, I just don't do it on this because it doesn't look
good. And that's not to mention Project Greenlight again. It's probably obvious. I just watched it the other day. Affleck brings up that point. He's like, when they did the first one in like, when was that, 2000, 99 or 2000, they're putting in VHS tapes and like watching this shoddily edited together stuff. Now everything looks motion picture quality. It is cool because this looks like a student film almost.
Right.
But I love it because I think it does help that atmosphere. And I mean, this was just Danny Boyle. This wasn't Danny Boyle now. He couldn't even shut the streets down of London at the time. And I think that has a lot to do with it too. Like, they're filming a lot of this stuff at 3-4 in the morning in London just so there's no traffic on the street, because they weren't shutting the traffic down. And there's one wide shot where you actually see another car moving that they just didn't edit out. So I think that has a lot.
Peter Jackson doesn't have to edit them out. Neither does Danny Boyle.
I think that has a little to do with it too, is that when they were filming, it was dark and gloomy. And I think they just kind of made that work to their advantage. And to go back to the zombie thing, it's hard not to associate it with zombie when the main poster of this has a quote that says Danny Boyle reinvents zombie horror, and it's scary as hell. So when
he reinvented it as infected horror.
The main poster of the movie is promoting it as reinventing the zombie movie. Yeah, I mean, they're still not zombies, but
whatever they have to do to get you in the theater to see this, I think in some cases the ends justify the means, and this movie's good enough to where even if they trick you, if you're a diehard zombie fan, I don't know many diehard zombie fans that don't still like this as well, even if, like us, they agree that it's not a zombie movie.
Yeah, and this led to so much.
It led to 28 weeks later.
Danny Boyle. I mean, like Sunshine, if we ever did a Sunshine movie, it would be pretty much the same as this, because I know I'm one of the only ones that feels that strongly about Sunshine. Sunshine's also a top three movie for me. So a lot of the stuff I love about this movie, I love about Sunshine too. But that's 28 days later. 2 days later from now, we'll talk about the sequel to this, 28 Weeks Later. And here's my problem with what I had against 28 Weeks Later. This movie wraps up so nicely.
Yeah.
Unlike this episode, because I forgot to make this point. This movie wraps up so nicely. You see progression. You know, this wasn't extinction. This was an infection.
Right.
And we're getting over it. They seem fairly peaceful in their cottage in the green land, building a sign. So, I mean, it seems like it phase that's passed. And you see the infected withering away and dying of hunger. You see the planes going back through looking for survivors. It wraps up so perfectly. When 28 Weeks was first announced, the best news that came out was that nobody was involved. Like Cillian Murphy, their story was done.
Right.
So I'm glad they didn't go that route. But, I mean, we'll talk about it more. This movie just wrapped up so nicely, and I didn't need more. And I felt like any sequel to this would just be like a cash grab sequel, which we'll hear my final thoughts on that here in a couple days.
I feel like you're going to say it was a cash grab.
We might.
Spoiler alert.
Tune in 2 days and see if I feel like it's a cash grab sequel or not. But this was our 28 Days Later episode, kicking off our first full week of October. Hit us up, moviesonup@gmail.com, facebook.com/moviesonup, Twitter @moviesonup. Do you not like this movie? Like, if you don't like this movie, please let us know, because I would love to hear it. Well, not just like, oh, I don't like zombie movies. If you watch this movie
and you don't think
it was a well-put-together movie, or you think it's a terrible movie, I want to know why. So let us know any of those ways.
Or let us know what your favorite zombie or infected movies are. That's fun, too.
Yeah, because I think we've done a zombie list before.
I'm sure we have, yeah.
I remember, I think maybe The Horde was up there. So I don't know.
It's a good movie.
But I don't listen to this show. I don't know what we've done in
the past.
That's true. So hit us up. And we'll see you in a couple days. If you haven't caught on, it's October. We're 2 episodes a week all through news episodes. Not quite sure what we're doing with news episodes through October yet.
It's not October for news yet.
Yeah, but we'll be 2 episodes a week through the end. All movies until Halloween, which we'll do something a little different, which I'm excited about. So we'll see you 2 days later. But until then,
keep it up.